Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana's sports station. 1037 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name for what
it's like. Locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3. Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Free throw is up. It is good. Virginia by one. 0.6 seconds to go. 63-62. D'Angelo Purifoy will inbound for Auburn. Purifoy holds the ball. 0.6 seconds left. Purifoy throws it in. Caught. Brown. Turnaround. No. And Virginia 63. Auburn 62. .13 to shoot, three in the right corner, not going to go. Rebound, Brandon Francis for Texas Tech. Texas Tech is going to dribble this one out. And the Red Raiders are going to go where no Texas Tech team has gone before. They're going to the national championship game. Texas Tech 61, Michigan State 51.
Good morning, Acadiana. I am your host, Raymond Parse III, here with the Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. You give us a call today, as always, on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. We do have a jam-packed show for you today. We'll talk LSU spring game. There were some highlights. There were some duds, but there were some highlights. We'll recap that for you. We'll also recap LSU baseball and UL baseball picking up huge weekend series victories, much needed for both program. Our good brother, the one himself, on the ones and twos, Cody Schutz, who's running on just a few hours of sleep because he stayed up all night to watch WrestleMania. He'll give us that WrestleMania recap that you're looking for. We'll also talk to our good friend George Faust from KLFY, some Raging Cajuns talk with him in the third hour. Jeff Palermo as well in the third hour. Tiger Rag Radio's own Jeff Palermo. Second hour, we'll talk with Jarrett Rozier about updates on LSU recruiting and LSU basketball. And we'll talk to our good friend, our old friend, Teddy Allen. That's right. Why we got Teddy on today? Well, it was a good day for not one, but two Louisiana Tech legends, as one was the head coach of the national championship winning Baylor Bears for the women's championship. And another one, a former Lady Texter, got inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame for basketball. But we'll start off the show talking about the Final Four. Well, Cody, my bracket's now done.
Welcome to the club. It's exclusive in here. Only the cool kids hang out in the Busted Bracket Club.
Let's start off with...
I've been here. They hang in it. They hung a plaque for me.
Well, I've been here, he says. I got a recliner. I got a lounge chair. I'm living the
dream.
Right,
parking spot out front, the whole nine yards.
The one game that was most surprising, one was dramatic and in a controversial fashion. That was the Auburn-Virginia game. We'll get to that here in a second. I want to start off with the Texas Tech-Michigan State game. I had Michigan State winning it all. So much for that. That did not end well for your boy. But Texas Tech, that game, I mean, it was a 10-point game, Cody, but it really wasn't that close. Texas Tech did a tremendous job, their defense, of clamping down on Michigan State. But they also got enough offensive production, which has always been a question mark about this Texas Tech Red Raiders team. They beat Michigan State 61-51. And Matt Mooney stepped up for the Red Raiders. He's a graduate transfer shooting guard. He shot a bunch of three-pointers. Well, three of them in a span of 3 minutes to give Texas Tech a 13-point lead midway through the second half. He matched his season high with 22 points in the victory. Now, Texas Tech, we know they locked down. They got the lockdown defense. And they did just that. But then they got the offensive spark that they needed to take down the favorite by 10 points. Once again, Texas Tech was making its first ever trip to the Final Four. Chris Beard has been linked to numerous other head coaching jobs. Why would he take any of those jobs, Cody? Like, that's the thing that I don't get. It's one thing if you make a run to the Sweet 16 and you get a chance to go to a better job. Is UCLA really a better job right now than Texas Tech? He had Texas Tech in the Elite Eight last year. He has them in the national championship game this year. It's not a better job. UCLA is a worse job right now. But Beard, they play that vaunted defense. They got after Sparty last night. Texas Tech actually went 5-for-5 from three-point range in a streak during that game. And with 9:38 to go, it was already a 48-35 game. Like, this really wasn't in contention. It was ugly. It wasn't exactly perfect by any stretch of the imagination for the Red Raiders, but they got the job done. This is what Kenny Goins, Michigan State star forward, said afterwards. It's like they never make mistakes. They got us kind of caught in that trap today. Tom Izzo, for as great as he is, he's been to 8 Final Fours as the head coach of Michigan State. He has the 2000 National Championship under his belt. He's lost 7 times in the Final Four. He's been to it 8 times, and every time Michigan State and Sparty gets to the Final Four, with the exception of the 2000 season, they lose. 7 losses in the Final Four now for Tom Izzo, which is a kind of a mind-blowing stat for a Hall of Fame coach. Jarrett Culver, who is the closest thing they have to a lottery pick, definitely a first-round draft pick, he only had 10 points and 5 boards. But their defense was tremendous. Culver was 0-for-6 in the first half. So Texas Tech, despite having their best offensive player struggling, the only guy in that game that was likely a first-round draft pick, struggle from the field as he did. Texas Tech still found a way to win the game in advancing to the national championship game tonight versus Virginia. Now, Auburn's run ended in controversial fashion. I'm sure you've heard it. I'm sure you've seen it. Where they go down and Kyle Guy draws a foul on a three-point shot attempt. Let me say this. If you're going to follow it by the letter of the law, yes, it was a foul. You can't put yourself into the body when he's going through the shot process. That's a bad mistake by the Auburn defender. Was it ticky-tack? Absolutely. Was it still letter of the law, a foul? Yes. Was it ticky-tack? Yes. It can be both things. And so much has been focused on the fact that Auburn stormed back and they had all the momentum, and here they are, and they have a lead. And the kid commits the foul. They call it on the Auburn player. But here's the thing that's lost in all of this. Yes, they should have called double dribble as well on that possession. So three-point shot should have never happened. That's a missed blown call by the refs. And the foul was ticky-tack. But here's the thing. Kyle Guy still needed to make all three of those free throws for Virginia to win the game. If he misses one, it's going to overtime. If he misses two, they lose the game. So lost in all the controversy with the lack of the dribble double call not called and the fact that it was a ticky-tack foul, even though it was a foul, is the fact that the Cat had to go to the line with less than a second to go and drain all three free throws. Virginia pulled out that 63-62 win against Auburn. Once again, Virginia slowed the game down, played it at their pace. Ty Jerome did have himself a heck of a game. Finished with 21 points on 8 for 16 shooting. Auburn was able to push the game late with a 9-0 run in the game's final minutes, cutting Virginia's lead to down to 1 with 2:17 to go, and then eventually took the lead. But then Virginia scored the final 6 points of the game thanks to the last-second foul of Kyle Guy on the three-point attempt. Guy is an 81.8% free-throw shooter. He knocked down two of the three free throws before Auburn took a timeout. And then after the break, Guy came to the line and sank the last free throw like a boss. You know how much of a pressure situation that is for that kid? I understand he's a great free throw shooter, but for him to step up and go, okay, I drain one, boom. I drain two, boom. Auburn takes a timeout, trying to freeze him, right? That's the whole point. That's what Bruce Pearl took the timeout for. He tries to freeze him up. Hopefully he'll miss the third free throw, and there'll be an overtime game, and Auburn will have an opportunity to try to win it in overtime. Didn't happen. This is what Guy said of the play that led to the foul. Quote, it was a great draw up by coach. We've ran it all year. I've gotten a lot of great shots from that corner. I had confidence in myself. It's what we dream of. So Tony Bennett and the Wahoos of Virginia, a year after being the first number one seed to ever lose to a 16 seed in the NCAA tournament, is now playing for the national championship tonight versus Texas Tech. Phenomenal. Just amazing that that is what has occurred. And now you get Virginia versus Texas Tech. Quick question, Cody, before we have to go to break. Will the winner score 60 points? We're actually going to make that a Twitter poll question. Will the winner of tonight's national championship game between Texas Tech and Virginia, will the winner eclipse 60 points? Because the way these two teams play defense, I may take the under. I may take the under, Cody Schutz. 60 points seems like a lot.
I mean, probably. I mean, at this point, these two teams are going to go with what they do best
in, and that's play defense
in the championship game. So, I mean, I don't see why at this point, all of a sudden, yeah, we're gonna rip and roar and do it.
In one of the games, it was 42-35 with like 8 minutes to go in the second half. It's not the basketball that's sexy.
It's like high school hoops.
By any stretch of the imagination.
Mediocre high school hoops at that.
You can come catch me, though, tonight at Twin Peaks on Johnston for a 103.7 The Game watch party. Yours truly will be there hosting it from 6 to 8 o'clock there at Twin Peaks on Johnston. They're going to have a great special on $5 Philly cheesesteaks. Plus, they got the teeth-chattering beer on tap. So come check me out. I'll be there. I'll have some swag to give away. And come catch the NCAA National Championship game for men's hoops. When we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3, the women had their championship game yesterday, and it was quite the doozy. Let's hope tonight is as exciting as the women's national championship game that occurred yesterday. Right here on 103.7 The Game.
Baseline entry to come from DeeDee Richards. 82-81 Baylor. Richards, near corner, pass tipped by Turner, out of bounds, and that's it!
She tipped the entry, but enough time ticks away, and Baylor is the national champion, 82-81, a thriller over Notre Dame and Tampa.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsha III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. The women's national championship game was yesterday, and it was a thriller. Baylor holds off a furious rally by Notre Dame to win in the closing seconds, 82-81. And it's Baylor's third national championship and their first since blowing out the Irish in the 2012 finale. Only UConn with 11 and Tennessee with 8 have more in the NCAA era. Baylor finishes the season 37-1. 37-1. All season long, Baylor thrived on the dominance of his post players, and against Notre Dame, it was the same thing. 6'7" Kalani Brown turned on the left block for layups all night long. 6'4" Lauren Cox, which many people believe is Baylor's best player, was dominant as well. But then the whole game changed. Baylor was in control for three quarters, nearly the entire first three quarters of Sunday's ballgame. But with less than a minute and a half to go in the third, Cox came down awkwardly on a rebound attempt, and then she just fell to the floor, grabbing her knee. She was screaming on the floor. Coach Kim Mulkey, Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, former Louisiana Tech Lady Texters national champion, and an assistant coach for a national championship team there at Louisiana Tech. She's been the longtime head coach there at Baylor. It was pretty dramatic seeing her drape herself over her sobbing player. They had to take Cox off the floor in a wheelchair. Cox was Baylor's second leading scorer, top rebounder, and top shot blocker. When that happened, they held a 62-50 lead. And then the Irish stormed all the way back and took advantage of the fact that Baylor's best overall player was in a wheelchair. And it was furious. They stormed all the way back. With 3.9 seconds left, score was 80-80. But then that's what happened. Baylor point guard Chloe Jackson, who said afterwards, "We had to finish the job for her," speaking of Cox. She entered the game averaging 11.3 points. In the final game of her career, Jackson stepped up and scored 26 points. With 28.6 left on the clock, 28.6 left on the clock, she hit the jumper to give Baylor an 80-78 lead. Then with 33.9 seconds left and the score at 80-80, Jackson, a graduate transfer, stepped up and made what would prove to be the game-winning basket. Notre Dame coach McGraw said this, national championship-winning coach herself. Jackson was having a day. Quote, "We were actually trying to guard her. She just got a lot of really good shots." When you say, "We were actually trying to guard her and it still didn't prevent her from going off." "She just got a lot of really good shots, shot over us, went by us, scored in pretty much any way. Really, really stepped up in the big moment." Do you know where Jackson previously played at, Cody?
I'd be guessing.
Jackson actually began her career, this is the title game MVP, for the Women's National Championship, helped Baylor win a national championship. She began her career at North Carolina State, but fractured her foot early in her freshman year, ending her year. She decided that the Wolfpack was not a good fit, and she transferred to LSU. sitting out another season because of NCAA rules. She was one of the Tigers' top players, but during her time there, they did not advance beyond the first round of the NCAA tournament. So she transferred out and went to go play for Baylor, where she helped them win a national championship.
Sounds like she went, man, y'all suck.
Her quote afterwards, I wanted to win.
Oh, so she did say that.
I wanted to win, said of her decision to come to Baylor. She had never played point guard at this level until this season. So this girl gave up her natural position and left LSU to go to Baylor because she wanted to win. She decided to change positions just because she wanted to win.
Say it worked out.
That's just another... That's not a good look for the LSU women's basketball team when one of your former players decided to leave and then goes and changes position and helps Baylor win a national championship while you're not even in the postseason.
Remember Simone Augustus?
Sylvia Fowles.
Remember Sylvia Fowles?
That was a great era.
Oh, yeah.
And people knock women's hoops, and I will stand up for women.
If it wasn't for Candace Parker, LSU basketball would be held in a much higher regard.
That run was tremendous, and I will stick up for the LSU women's program. People are like, oh, no one shows up, no one cares about women's basketball. Bruh. When they
were playing,
the
BMAC was a thing because of them.
That was because of them. People were more excited to watch the women play than they were the men. I think if you even asked John Brady about that, the former head coach of the men's team during that time when they went to the Final Four that year, people got excited to watch Simone Augustus and Sylvia Fowles play basketball there at LSU. They packed the PMAC. You're exactly correct. Baylor entered the tournament having only lost once to Stanford back in December. But congratulations to Kim Mulkey, Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, Louisiana Tech legend, for winning yet another national championship. And this is what Kim Mulkey's resume is now. This is the coach that Louisiana Tech didn't think was good enough to have, by the way. This is what she's done now in her career. She's won three titles as the Baylor head coach. She won two NCAA titles as a player and an assistant at Louisiana Tech. She was the point guard for the U.S. Olympic gold medal team in 1984. She won four state championships at Hammond High School, going 136-5. Oh, by the way, and our good friend Scott Rabelais tweeted this out. She's not even a finalist for the Naismith Hall of Fame this year. How is that possible? I have a feeling she'll be one next year. But congratulations to the Baylor Lady Bears for winning another national championship. When we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3, it's time for some Louisiana wrap-up right here on 103.7 The Game.
It's time for the Louisiana wrap-up.
We're doing the Louisiana wrap-up in the first hour today, in the first day of the week.
It's a jam-packed show, Cody. We're starting off the week strong.
It must be extremely important. So let's dive right into it. Today, Raymond, on the Louisiana wrap-up, we're going to start right here at home in Lafayette. So tell me what you got.
Home via Canada.
Via Canada, of course. Okay.
Yes.
Via Canada.
Yes. We're going to start off. The National Basketball League of Canada is pleased to announce. That is a thing.
All right.
That's a legit. The NBL. That's Canada's premier pro league, okay, for our friends in the Great White North. Former Raging Cajun star Frank Bartley of the St. John Riptide has been named Rookie of the Year for the 2018-19 season. Bartley joined the starting lineup for the Riptide. First of all, great name.
It's not bad.
Joined the starting lineup. He started 35 of 39 games. He led the Riptide in scoring in 17 separate games, including a stretch from January 6th to January 13th, where he's the leading scorer for St. John in four separate contests. He averaged 19.3 points per game, which was eighth in the league, and third in the league in total points scored. Also, Bartley earned Player of the Week honors twice this past season. This is what Riptide head coach Nelson T. Taraboa said, quote, Frank has been a consistent scoring presence for us all year. What I'm most pleased about is that from the beginning, he has embraced the importance of being detail-oriented with his defensive assignments in addition to his offensive contributions. He's really had some big games for us, and with continued experience, I anticipate that he will have a bright future playing the game for many years to come. So congratulations to Frank Bartley. He's out there living this dream, playing pro basketball there in Canada, and had a tremendous start to his professional career, being named Rookie of the Year there in the National Basketball League of Canada.
I mean, you can only do what is presented to you, and considering he was a rookie, that was the league in which he was playing, being the best of those guys. I mean, that's about the best you can do. So shout out to the former Raging Cajun there. Let's take a trip, I guess, across the basin is what they would say. As well, hold on. Let me get this right. We're going to head down extremely south until we get back to Louisiana, and then we'll head over the basin as now we're heading to the capital city, Baton Rouge.
Nice. I love it. You know, we were there in BR on Saturday, Cody.
We saw a little bit of this hype, a little bit of these
A little rumors. Bit of hype. There was a lot of things going on Saturday, right? Baseball had the double header, had the twin bill. LSU spring game, which we were at. We were also at baseball, too. We did the twofer. We had men's tennis. We had the track and field team was having a meet there as well. There's a lot going on.
Beach volleyball as well.
Beach volleyball
ranked in the top five.
But none of them are going to a national championship.
Not yet, at least.
Do you know who is?
Who's that?
The LSU gymnastics team.
Should have known.
For the 30th time in school history, LSU has advanced to the NCAA gymnastics championships after they won the NCAA Baton Rouge Regional with a team score of 197.500 Saturday night inside the PMAC. The Tigers won their 12th NCAA Regional in program history and the 7th in a row. The squad will compete for the NCAA championships now in Fort Worth, Texas, April 19th to the 20th. They're 24-3 overall after posting the 4th highest team score at an NCAA regional in school history. This is what longtime gymnastics head coach D.D. Bro and a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer said. What an exciting and hard-fought night of competition. This team did not give up and took every routine one at a time. We were dealt some real adversity this weekend, and this team did not stop. I'm proud of them and so happy to advance to the NCAA championships. So congratulations to the LSU gymnastics team heading back. Now, they've had individual national champions, mm-hmm. Cody. They've never won the team championship.
Looking for the big one.
But now they're looking for the big one in Fort Worth. So congratulations to D.D. Bro and her squad for once again advancing to the NCAA championships.
Yeah, I mean, they may have... could be argued that they had the biggest crowd of all on Saturday, but I guess we could always look at attendance, so to speak, to see. But I bet you that more than any one game, maybe not combined, but any one game of that doubleheader, maybe even more than the spring game, they were looking. I mean, we were told maybe around 10,000-ish or so for the spring game. There were probably more than that at the PMAC for this. So
I would agree
gymnastics
with that.
It was a big deal.
It's a big deal in there in BR. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Let's continue the Louisiana wrap-up as we move around the state. Let's head over to Ruston, Louisiana. What do you got for us out there, Ray?
You know, Sunday was a good day for former Lady Texters greats. We already talked about that. Kim Mulkey, head coach at Baylor, she won herself another national championship, right? But she wasn't the only former Lady Texter legend to have a good day.
Good day to be a Bulldog.
It was a good day. Former Louisiana Tech Kodak All-American and WNBA All-Star Teresa Weatherspoon will be part of the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame class of 2019, which was announced Sunday in Minneapolis, Minnesota, the site of the men's Final Four. Weatherspoon will be enshrined during the festivities in Springfield, Massachusetts this September and will join a star-studded class that includes two-time NBA Coach of the Year Bill Fitch, 8-time NBA All-Defensive First Team member Bobby Jones, 5-time NBA All-Star Sidney Moncrief, 7-time NBA All-Star Jack Sikma, and 5-time NBA All-Star Paul Westfall. And the first men's collegiate team to win back-to-back championships, the Tennessee A&I teams of 57 and 59. She will join Karl Malone and Leon Barmore as the third Louisiana Tech alums to join the most prestigious basketball Hall of Fame. I could also argue she's the biggest name on that list for this year's class. Spoon played for Louisiana Tech from 84 to 88, where she was named Kodak All-American twice. In 88, she led the team to the NCAA championship and was named the recipient of the Wade Trophy. She was inducted into the Tex Hall of Fame in 95, the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame in 2010, and as I said, she's also a member of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. She would go on to be a five-time WNBA All-Star and two-time WNBA Defensive Player of the Year. She was one of the most iconic players for the New York Liberty, where she was the first player to tally 1,000 points and 1,000 assists in the WNBA period. So, congratulations to Spoon for getting into the Naismith Hall of Fame.
A big congratulations. Like you said, the biggest honor, basically, you can get once your career on the court has ended. So
that's it.
Shout out. We've got one more stop to make before we end the Louisiana wrap-up, though.
Ooh,
we do.
Jam-packed.
And I wouldn't want to stop anywhere else than right back here in the heart of Acadiana Lafayette. Raymond, talk to me.
That's right. UL softball took care of business. They swept the doubleheader from UTA. That's Texas Arlington, University of Texas at Arlington. It was yet another Sun Belt Conference Series win for the Raging Cajuns. The 10th-ranked UL squad swept the doubleheader from the UTA Mavericks on Saturday afternoon at Yvette Girard Field at Lampson Park, winning the first game 2-0 before capturing the second game 4-2. The two wins extended UL's current win streak to 10 games. Coupled with their win over UTA in the series opener on Friday night, the Cajuns now have extended their league series win streak to 51. A school and Sun Belt Conference record. Louisiana has not dropped a conference series since St. Patrick's Day weekend back in 2013. So congratulations to the UL Raging Cajuns for continuing their dominance in the Sun Belt. The Raging Cajuns softball team will be returning to action versus Southeastern Louisiana this week, and then they have to go on the road for a three-game set at App State. So, congratulations to Coach Jerry Glasgow and his bunch for continually dominating Sun Belt Conference play. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Louisiana Wrap-Up. When we come back, we'll put a bow on the first hour here. We're going to talk New Orleans Pelicans, and usually when we do that, it's about losing. But for some reason, they decided to win last night, and we'll dive into why that was a bad thing right here on the Wrap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
Payton with five to shoot in a minute to play. Makes the crossover. Throws it into the pocket. Looking for Okafor. Tipped back toward Payton, and he scores off a baseline right fade. My partner usually describes it as hot garbage.
Yes, that is.
Yes.
But Elfrid Payton with a little push shot.
Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parch III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Start off the hour talking about the Final Four for the men, the controversial end to the Auburn-Virginia game, as well as Texas Tech locking down Michigan State, and they advancing to the national championship game, which will be tonight. And you can come hang out with me at Twin Peaks on Johnston, by the way, for a 103.7 The Game watch party from 6 to 8. They got a great deal on Philly cheesesteaks, only $5. And, of course, the teeth-chattering beer and the scenic views. So you can come join me. We'll have some stuff to give away. And you can come out and tell me how much you hate the show, which will be just fine. We also talked NCAA women's title game, Baylor winning their national championship in dramatic fashion over Notre Dame. More than likely, there were more points scored in that game that will be in tonight's game. We did a Louisiana wrap-up where we crisscrossed the state, giving you all the news to talk about. We're going to stay in the state, but it was actually a game that occurred on the road. New Orleans Pelicans, bound for the lottery, trying to do everything they can to increase their chances of having more ping pong balls in the little machine so they can get themselves a great draft pick to do the rebuild mode with, right? That's the whole thing. They're going to trade away Anthony Davis. They're going to use their own lottery pick. And then they're going to build around Drew Holiday with this lottery pick and maybe some other pieces. No Anthony Davis yesterday because of the continuing, quote-unquote, back spasms. Drew Holiday's been shut down for a long time, for weeks now. He's not playing. Hell, they didn't even let Julius Randle play. They were resting him, was the excuse by the Pelicans. So they're on the road at Sactown, who missed on the playoffs. They faded. They were in the playoff picture, but then they faded and are not going to be part of the postseason. So no Anthony Davis. No Drew Holiday. No Julius Randle, even. What do the Pels do? They mess around and go and win the game. 133-129. The Pelicans had only 8 players available to play in the game. And they still won. 8. There's 5 players on the court. That means they only had 3 bench players that could actually play, that was available to play. And somehow they're on the road and they pull out a 133-129 win. Ian Clark went off 31 points. Jahlil Okafor had a double-double, 23-14. And our boy, Elfrid Payton, 26 points, 14 assists, 6 rebounds. Tremendous. Showing heart, showing effort. It's a great thing, right? Except it's not. Would you like to know why it's not? I'll tell you why. Because they now just jeopardized their chance of getting a great lottery pick. With the win, the Pels are now number 9 in the lottery odds. They were in a 4-way tie for the number 6 spot in the second quarter. In the second quarter, they were in a 4-way tie. And then they won the game. And now they're number 9. So as terrible of a season as this has been for the Pelicans, with the awful season on the court, with the Anthony Davis trade drama, with Dale Demps being fired, with national people debating the commitment of Gail Benson and ownership on what they want to do with this team. All that being said, you could at least like kind of look forward to, hey, this team at least get a really good draft pick, right? They're 33-48 overall. They're 12th in the Western Conference. They're terrible. But the Pels said no. And you can't really ask them to do anything else because you can't just go out there on purpose and tank, right? You can't have guys just jacking up shots that are terrible shots. I mean, Anthony Davis is not playing because of back spasms. They shut down Drew Holiday. Hell, they held out Julius Randle. The Pels tried to do the best that they could. They held out Anthony Davis for the quote-unquote back spasms and then held out Julius Randle. Their 3 best players did not play in the game. Didn't even come close to getting on the court. They had Ian Clark out there playing. So they did what they could. But at the end of the day, it's Alvin Gentry's job as the coach to coach the team and to coach them up. And I've said this the entire time since the whole AD drama started and he got banged up. These guys are trying to play for contracts, man. Elfrid Payton, Ian Clark, Okafor. These cats are trying to show not only the New Orleans Pelicans that they're valuable pieces and that they should be given contracts during this offseason. They're showing the rest of the NBA. Because front offices pay attention. They don't care that the Pels are terrible and that the Pels have nothing to play for. They're going to watch film, they're going to watch game tape, and they're going to try to find guys that can help their team win. And in a meaningless game on a Sunday in Sacramento, if that may help Ian Clark or Elfrid Payton get a contract, a 3-year deal where they can get some guaranteed money, I'm not going to I'm not going to hate on them for that. Because they're trying to secure their livelihood. But it does hurt the Bills for the lottery odds. Now, the lottery format's changed this year where they try to make it more balanced and try to make it all the teams have more of a chance to get up in the lottery. Okay, so it's a little bit more staggered, a little bit more not as overwhelming for whoever has the worst record. And is there that much of a difference between being at the projected 9 spot or in the lottery odds, the 9 team or the 6 team? There is a difference there. Is it going to be the difference between, saying, being at the 6 spot and the 1 spot? No, of course not. And the best chance for the New Orleans Pelicans to get Zion Williamson, who a lot of Pels fans want to see in a Pelicans jersey, and to have them build around him with Drew Holiday and Julius Randle, is hope that one of the other teams that is going to win the lottery, more than likely the New York Knicks would be a team that comes to mind, and trade Anthony Davis to them. Right? That's how, even before things went sideways, and even with before they were winning games here down the stretch that they should be losing, their best chance, their best opportunity to lock up someone like Zion Williamson or Morant or whoever they decide they want to go after there at the top of the draft this summer is to trade Anthony Davis to said team who holds that lottery pick and get that lottery pick in return so you can get the Zion Williamson. Pels will wrap things up tomorrow night in the Smoothie King Center. Regular season finale for the Pels. They will welcome in the Golden State Warriors, who have already clinched the 1 seed in the West, which means likely that Boogie Cousins and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson probably will play minimal if they play at all. So the Pels could win another game in the regular season finale.
Do it big.
Do it big. Do it big, New Orleans. That's going to do it for the first hour. We did it big. Just saying. It's a good start to the show. Second hour coming up, we're going to talk to our friend Teddy Allen when we return here on the Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't
set on your locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parts the Third.
One of God's own prototypes. High-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Welcome to the second hour of the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsh III, here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. First hour, we talked about the men's Final Four and tonight's national championship game. We also touched on the NCAA women's national championship game, which was a thriller yesterday, 82-81, the Baylor Lady Bears over the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. We're going to talk a little bit more about how yesterday's national championship game and some other news has some strong ties to the state of Louisiana, and particularly northern Louisiana, with our next guest as we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on the one and only Teddy Allen. He is the football color guy for Louisiana Tech. He is what he deems himself, a recovering sports writer. He's also a featured columnist for the Monroe News Star and the Shreveport Times, as well as designatedwriters.com. Teddy, how are you this morning, brother?
No, I'm good, man. Good to hear from you, buddy.
Good to hear from you too, my friend. It's good to hear from you. So let's start off with, I want to get into a little Masters talk with you as well, because I know you're heading out to Augusta for this week for the prestigious golf tournament there among the Azaleas. But before we get to a little golf talk, let's talk about the Women's National Championship game, because it featured a Louisiana Tech legend. Kim Mulkey played at Louisiana Tech. She was an All-American there. She won a national championship there as an assistant coach. And now she's won her third national championship at Baylor as the head coach there. As a Tech guy yourself, you know, how much pride do you guys take up there in Ruston when you get to see Kim Mulkey out there still winning national championships?
Yeah, it's a bunch of fun. And by the way, you mentioned the Masters and all. It's a great time of year, isn't it, with baseball starting and the Final Four and the Masters. So lucky to be vertical and breathing air this week. The Mulkey thing, of course, she's from Tickfall down around where y'all are. But I'm glad she came to school at Tech. She's a wonderful competitor, and enjoy going to school with her and watching those. We got spoiled watching those Lady Texas teams back in the early 80s. They won the AIAW title and then the first NCAA title in 82. So back-to-back winner-winner chicken dinners. And then I think it was 7 Final Fours they went to during her time as either a player or an assistant with Leon Ballmer. She actually rose to the, associate head coach role and was here for 15 years. And then won the 88 championship with Teresa Weatherspoon, the Wade Trophy winner at Point. So it's fun to always see her in her Tech blue when she coaches in a title game. And I had a couple texts about that last night. She's a good one. And, again, if she's gonna be out there as a player or coach, you're going to get 100%, that's for sure. She's pretty much locked in.
And Teddy, what do you think about, it became very noticeable in anyone that's kind of followed this team about this year's squad is, okay, so Kim is from the state of Louisiana. She graduated from Tech. She was under Leon for all those years. A lot of people thought she was going to succeed Leon, and that didn't happen. And here she is in Baylor over in Waco, and Waco is nowhere close to being even remotely near the border with Louisiana, but yet you have a Louisiana coach. You have a handful of players from the state of Louisiana, including New Orleans, and including a former LSU transfer there. Any surprise whatsoever that Kim Mulkey has been able to build what she's been able to build, and she's done it with her connections to the state of Louisiana?
No, I don't think so, because Kim's smart. I mean, she was a straight-A student. She won 4 titles in high school, and then again a couple as a player. So she knows what she's doing. And I think she probably saw the writing on the wall maybe when she was, that there was a possibility of her being coach at Tech and she couldn't get quite the deal that she wanted. So she went to a bigger money place. I mean, it's hard at Tech now when you can, other places people are flying to games and Tech's busing or something like that. It's just a different landscape. And she knew there was plenty of talent in Louisiana. It wasn't that far away. And so I applaud her for what she's been able to do. But if you knew Mulkey from back in the day, if you've known her for 40 years, then you're not surprised. There's a method to her madness. I mean, she knows what she's doing. So, and people, girls are attracted to her in that way. I mean, she's like Sonya Hugg used to be when she was at Tech. And which Sonya still is this way, but I mean, as far as the dressing and the, acting like having manners and still being competitive, and that's just the way she's always been. So nothing Mulkey does surprises her.
We're talking with Teddy Allen. You can give him a follow on Twitter at Mama Loves Manning. That's LUVS. Mama Loves Manning. Teddy, you mentioned another fellow Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer in Weatherspoon. That was the other news I wanted to get to today with you is yesterday it was announced that she will be inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. For me, I look at that class, she's the biggest name to me. For now, she becomes only the third Tech player or Tech player slash coach to be inducted, joining Karl Malone and, of course, Leon. When you heard the news drop yesterday that Teresa finally got into the Naismith Hall of Fame, what were your thoughts?
What took you so long? Probably. She was a stud. And she's a charismatic person if ever there was one. She tried coaching at Tech, but really her game is the pro game, and it was good that she got up and got on the pro staff. But as far as a player, she was charismatic, made everybody better, did whatever Leon and Kim asked her to do. Was just a tremendous athlete, energy level off the chart. She went into our Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. We can just mention that for a second, a few years ago, and she lit up the place. I mean, very charismatic, and so I'm thrilled for Teresa. And I know Leon and the mailman feel the same way about her. She's their equal in her game, and I'm thrilled for her.
So,
before I forget, speaking of the Hall of Fame, the Louisiana Sports Writers Hall or the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame is 6th, 7th, 8th in June. Just go to lawsportshall.com and see about getting a ticket, because that'll be a fun weekend, as you know.
Oh, I'll be there.
I'll Lafayette to feel left out.
It'd be funner. The more people from Lafayette are there, the funner it'll be.
Well, the biggest
any event. But.
That's right. The biggest crowds that we've had for induction weekend typically involve people from Lafayette and the Acadiana area when we enshrine people from here.
Bingo.
There you go.
Absolutely. Got to have them.
Teddy, tell me a little bit about what did you think of the men's Final Four this weekend, and what do you think of the NCAA tournament, this year's tournament? I know a lot of discussion's been talked about. Well, you know, it lacks star power, and I make the argument that this is what the basketball has become under the one-and-done era, where, the exception of Duke 1 year and Kentucky 1 year, the majority of the teams that are going to Final Fours and winning national championships are teams with senior-laden veteran teams that don't have lottery picks, because that's what the one-and-done era has done, that these teams that have learned how to play together are the ones that are in the mix. Your thoughts on this year's tournament and this whole trend of, it seems like, less star power, less sexiness, so to speak, but more team basketball.
Yeah, attaboy, you keep spreading that gospel, because that's the truth. My opinion, anyway, I agree with you. And in college basketball, it's so much fun to watch a team in November. They're a different team come March. I mean, you see teams grow. It's just that's the beautiful thing about that game. So you get to this point in the year, and that's why a team like Texas Tech, which did not have one vote in the preseason poll. 49 different teams got at least one vote. They had zero, but they're 40 minutes away tonight. And Virginia, another team that learned from last year's mistakes and became a better team as the year went on. Neither one of them panicked. The first weekend was kind of a dud. And we have a guy from Louisiana Tech that was a student assistant when I was a graduate assistant in sports information. He's a commissioner of Southland Conference now, Tom Burnett. He's a wonderful guy. This is his second year on the selection committee. And I said, called him after that first weekend, and I said, "You're fired, because that was terrible." He said, "Just wait till the regionals." He said, "Just wait till the regionals." And those four regional finals were as fun as any basketball you've ever seen. They've got to be. And then the same with these two semifinals the other night. It was just a joy to watch. This thing tonight, it could be, you know, could end 30-28. I think the over-under is 120. And that's the lowest. I mean, that's like a 61-59 game. It's the lowest in memory for a total. But those guys can play some serious defense. I mean, and it's just a joy to watch. So everybody's strapped in tonight. I wish the game wouldn't start so late. But that's the price we pay to be a modern fan. I'm really looking forward to it.
We're talking with Teddy Allen. He's a columnist, Sunday columnist for the Shreveport Times and the Monroe News Star. He also does the football color commentary for Louisiana Tech. Teddy, I know you're gearing up for a big trip. How many times has this been this week will you have been going to the Masters?
I think I started when Bubba Watson won the first one. 2012, this will be my 8th or 9th. We've had a Patrick Reed win. I'm backing up in my brain. Sergio, Danny Willett, Jordan Spieth. Then three left-handers: Bubba Watson, Adam Scott, Bubba Watson. So I think that's 7 or 8.
So take me. So take me back to that first time you went. What led you to go to the Masters that year? How did that all go down?
I had always missed it back 30 years ago when I was covering the Final Four, and then you go to the – what people do is go to the Final Four, then you slide on over to the Masters, and for some reason I'd always miss that. But the guy, the editor at the Augusta paper, needed some help a few years ago, and so he called me and said – I said, sure, I'll come. And so I did that for a couple years for them, and then I got to where I could just do it by myself for our papers and different people. And so that's how I've kept going. It's a beautiful piece of property. It's fascinating that 85 years ago, these guys saw what that could be and kind of envisioned it being a big tournament. And, you know, it worked out that the way they did the land can handle all these people pretty comfortably. And it's just the most well-run event, that I've ever been to. And then I ask guys who, you know, go all over the world covering ball, and they say the same thing. It's a spectacular place. I got a text an hour ago from four of my friends who one of them won the lottery, and they're over there today. And, you know, these guys are 40 years old, and they're just like little bitty kids on Christmas morning. And I'm thrilled for them. And you've heard other people say this, but you, it's beautiful on TV, but you can't tell how the rise and fall of the land and all the undulation and stuff. It's just it's a spectacular place. If you're going this week, you're from Lafayette and you're cruising over to Augusta, you're among the blessed that are going. Just, you know, wear good walking shoes and take a little bit of spending money. It costs you $1.50 for a sandwich, and you'll eat about $10 or $15 worth of those and get you some water, and they'll give you an apple or a banana or something, and just lap it up, man. Get you a chair and set it down. You don't have to worry about anybody moving it. Go work the land and lap back around.
Teddy, real quick before we let you go, brother, who do you got? Sir. Who do you like? You can be one or two golfers, but who do you like in the field this week?
Yeah, let's go. Rory McIlroy, who's 8-1, and Dustin Johnson is 10-1, and I have no idea, but keep an eye on the big young Spaniard guy too, named John Rahm. He's like at 16-1, and he was fourth or fifth last year, but he's got a shot as well. I hope everybody has a great Masters League, and hope you have a good Final Four tonight.
Well, Teddy, I appreciate you coming on, brother. Be safe with your travels and enjoy Augusta again, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Yep. Love you, buddy. See you later. Thanks, man. Bye.
That's Teddy Allen joining us, talking a little women's Final Four as well as a Masters preview talk. When we come back here on the Rav Game with RP3, LSU football wrapped up its spring practice with the spring game on Saturday. Me and Cody Schutz were there. We'll give you a recap right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rav Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We've got our good friend Jarrett Rozier coming up at 7:32. Going to talk a little LSU football recruiting and some hoops. But before we get to that, I want to talk about the LSU spring game. Myself and Cody Schutz, producer extraordinaire, were there watching the spring game. And if you want to check out my four takeaways from the spring game, there's a blog posted up on the 103.7 The Game website about exactly that. But here's just kind of a brief, one of the four. Derek Stingley Jr. can start. Not only can he play, but he can start right now for LSU.
Yeah.
He's that good. He
looks the part, too.
He looks the part. The way he was covering guys on those routes towards the sideline, how he never got out of position, how he never did not have his head turned around, the way he understands the scheme. I've said it before. He is the most hyped guy and the guy that I believe will live up to the hype at LSU since Patrick Peterson. There was talk Saturday when we were at Tiger Stadium. Well, you know, the guy with the most hype, you know, you can make the argument that was Leonard Fournette. Look, Fournette had hype, and offensive guys get a lot more pub. I get that. But he reminds me of when Patrick Peterson came on campus. Because Peterson was one of the highly touted prospects in the entire country. And he arrived, and he lived up to the billing. Like, we watched him play, and I know it's a spring game, and you can't overdo it, but he just looks like he can be the number one corner. Like, we think Christian Fulton should be the number one because he's the veteran coming back off injury. But don't be surprised when they start the season there at Tiger Stadium that Derek Stingley Jr. is not the number one cornerback on the field for the Tigers. And he showed it yesterday when he had this on Saturday when he went up for a 50-50 ball thrown by Joe Burrow. And he pulled the ball out of the wide receiver's hand, Marshall, and came down with it.
Yeah.
And that was just a man move. That was just legit, I am a man, I am here, don't test me. You want to throw a 50-50 ball on me there, Joe Burrow? I'm going to make you look bad, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, Joe Burrow said after the game, there was no separation during the spring game whenever he looked Stingley's way. He still threw the ball that way a few times to, you know, see what he could do. But he said anytime he looked that way, there was no separation. He said he learned quickly that you can't just put a 50-50 ball up Stingley's way. If you do that, obviously, he's going to come down with the interception. So,
and the folks on their schedule better not. I mean, that's the other thing. Like, you know, there's going to be offensive coordinators that are going to be like, oh, he's only a freshman, I don't care. Oh, and there's going to be a wide receiver, and there's going to be a quarterback that are going to be feeling themselves a little much.
Good.
And they're like, oh, he's a freshman, let's test him, I can do this. Let me know how that works out for you when this guy becomes like a freshman All-American. This is what Coach O had to say about his freshman phenom there at the spring game.
It's what we saw all spring. That the guy came in, was phenomenal. Practiced with him before the bowl game. He just came in from day one and was able to compete in a starting position. The play he made on that ball, he made those plays every Saturday. I think he's going to be an excellent player. You see him return a punch for us, I think he's going to make the difference there.
He did handle the punt return duties, but obviously it's a spring game. They have no gunners, so it's just fielding the punt and then just running 5 yards and going to the sideline.
Right. Just catch it.
Yeah, just catch it. But Derek Stingley was not the only person that was impressive. D-tackle was a big impressive. They got the kid out of Utah that had a couple of sacks, but it was a local product, Tyler Shelvin, who started off his career at Northside High School, transferred for a senior year to Crowley to play for Notre Dame and Louis Cook. He's had issues with weight and grades since he's been at LSU. Apparently both things are under wraps. Coach O told us in the presser that his playing weight's probably going to be 341, okay? But he came up big, had a fumble recovery. This was what Coach O had to say about the Acadiana product.
Tyler's lean body mass is 338. That's pretty phenomenal. He's at 341, so we're not going to get him any lighter. So he's going to play around 340, get in condition, but now he's putting on muscle, taking off fat, growing up, taking accountability. I think he's going to be an excellent player for us.
Expect Tyler to be in that rotation. They're going to rotate both of those cats, the guy out of Utah as well, who's an early enrollee. They'll rotate both of those guys at nose tackle, replacing Ed Alexander, who declared for the draft and is not coming back to LSU. The wide receiving core, Jefferson's going to lead the way. That's still going to be Joe Burrow's favorite target. I talk about that in the blog as well. But Sullivan, he had an up-and-down game. He's going to be lined up at wide receiver as in tight end. He's like 6'6". He had two sensational catches. He also had a couple bad drops. This is what Coach O had to say about Sullivan.
I think the more that we can throw the ball to Stephon Sullivan, the better we're going to be. He's a force. We use him at tight end. We spin him out. And Jamar Chase had a great, great spring. Jefferson's outstanding. Terrence is coming along. I think that we have a great group of wide receivers.
And they do. Wide receiver is immense. They are immensely deep at wide receiver. Jefferson's going to be the go-to target, though. And if they can get anything else out of the other guys, it's just gravy. But spring game is in the books. LSU football. What did they show us? We didn't see a lot of RPOs or anything like that. It was very kind of, they kept it close to the vest, so to speak. But some guys did stand out for the Tigers. We'll talk more LSU with our next guest, Jarrett Rozier of Tiger Details, right here on the Wrap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live and direct from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time to welcome on our second guest of the show. He covers LSU football and hoops for TigerDetails.com, but he's also an expert when it comes to Tigers recruiting. We're going to dive into that with our good friend, Jarrett Rozier, as we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, how are you this morning, brother?
Hey, man. I'm doing well. How are y'all?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Look, I want to go back a little bit over some news that happened earlier, well, to start off the weekend. And I know you had a jam-packed weekend with checking out what occurred down there in New Orleans with some of the top prospects in the state and in the country. I want to dive into that. But before that, I want to start off with LSU men's basketball. Last week, Naz Reid, which we kind of anticipated, the freshman sensation, declares for the NBA draft. He's gone, projected to be a first-round draft pick. 24 hours later, Tremont Waters, all-SEC first team, co-all-SEC defensive player of the year. He decides he opts out. He flirted with it last year. He decides to go this year. Now, he's not projected to be even drafted. Now, that can change, but that's where we stand right now with the projections. And then the surprise, though, came on Friday, Jarrett. That's your boy, Skylar Mays, very much the heart of this year's team and even last year's team. This is a BR kid, great student. He decides to declare for the NBA draft. Your thoughts? Were you surprised that Skylar decided to declare, and your thoughts on all three guys?
Yeah, I mean, to have all three happen that quickly after the season, and particularly you mentioned Skylar as a guy that, I mean, has been such a solid basketball player for LSU, but hadn't been looked at or talked about so much in that NBA draft conversation the way that that the other two guys had at points. You know, I thought it might take a little longer before those announcements, but at the same time with some of the rules changes in recent years where Trey, who kind of flirted with potentially leaving last year or at least wanted to make sure that he got the information on what that might look like for him last year, he's able to enter his name this year, and all of those guys are able to work with agents during this pre-draft process under certain restrictions of what they can or cannot receive and still ultimately have the opportunity to potentially pull their names back. And so they're not necessarily completely gone yet. They still, you know, have the opportunity to, like we were talking about last week, get some information on where exactly they stack up, just as guys around the country do. And then also for the LSU players in particular right now, it gives them some more time to see what's going on with the program in Baton Rouge. And so they have the opportunity to still pull their names back, but at the same time, the way they announced, all of them seem to have a certain level of definitiveness to it. I mean, Skylar's very, very touching message about his time at LSU. He just had that sense of, it's all right, you know, turning the page to the next chapter. And they were all very public announcements. And so I'm interested to see how it all plays out. Just what we were talking about last week in a lot of ways in terms of the information they get back from the NBA, how things continue to progress with regards to the LSU basketball program. And I think it's probably a more complicated process for them than it is for a lot of players around the country at the moment as well.
We're on with Jarrett Rozier of Tiger Details. Jarrett, I agree with you. The way their announcements on social media were very much kind of finality. It was very much them saying goodbye. Is it done, though? Do we think, I mean, with Skylar gone, that's the one that surprised me because I thought, you know, he's so close to graduating that he would have came back for another year. But, I mean, he's so whip smart as it is that he can just get his, you know, degree whenever he wants to. I get that. But he did play better, and he did step up for the NCAA tournament. He led the team in scoring those first two games. So, you know, maybe Skyler feels that this is his best chance. I'm not for sure on that. But what about Javonte? Do you think Javonte, now the other three guys have declared, do you think Javonte is going to do the same?
I certainly think he's somebody to watch at the moment. Very similarly to I mean, what we were saying last week, he and Nas, I think, both came into their LSU careers with a lot of hype and talk about them as having some potential as being one and done guys. If things went that first year, it was, I mean, a little bit more certainty or expectation to that with Nas than Javonte. But with the way the season went, I thought both still had some development in college as potential sophomores that could have helped their draft stock, because Nas, the guy that has spent a lot of this season in the second round of a lot of mock drafts and the highest I've seen him climb more recently has been up to about 25 or 28. So, I mean, just kind of sneaking into the back end of that first round, still haven't seen Javonte do that anywhere. And so I thought for both of them that there would be a lot of sense to coming back and helping themselves for the 2020 draft and probably positioning themselves much better. But then Nas is the first one to announce. And I think even before Trey and Skyler made their announcements, there were kind of a lot of eyes on Javonte just because his name has been so heavily linked to the whole wiretap situation that was leaked through Yahoo Sports with Wade talking to Christian Dawkins. Or, I mean, at least that's kind of the allegations that have been run with in the court of public opinion. And so I'm interested to see just with those other guys, but with that much more intensity for Javonte, what the next few weeks to a month look like in terms of how the LSU program looks, because his name has been so closely linked to a lot of what's going on.
Jared, let's go away from the basketball court for a second. Head over to the football field. I know you weren't there in person covering the spring game, but I know you were watching it from afar. I just want to get some thoughts, some initial thoughts on what you thought about LSU's spring game. Springs to mind, first of all, Derek Stingley Jr. What'd you think of that interception?
Yeah, I think probably the most exciting part of the spring game to me was the opportunity for people to see Derek Stingley Jr. And for that, I mean, for that case or whatever, Siaki Ika, also those guys in LSU uniforms for the first time, the early enrollees in Tiger Stadium and all of that. Because I think the spring game is great, but I have a tendency to not get particularly excited about it because it's a game where you go in and you know that the coaching staff isn't going to want to show too much offensively and some of the things they've changed, and then you're going to be missing a lot of guys, and then there's always some guys that step up and you get this false sense of, well, they're going to be dudes in the fall, and then they kind of disappear. So I was actually kind of talking to Jimmy on Friday about, you know, like, I'm glad we've got Ron and Glenn over there at the spring game. I can come catch out some of these prospects. And after a while, he's like, man, what is this spring game do to you? You're really negative about this. I was like, no, man, it's great. Like, it's a good opportunity this time of year. But the one thing, even then, with my general lack of enthusiasm about spring games compared to, I think, a lot of people, was those two guys are guys that I think have a lot of expectations, and I feel really confident are going to be really key pieces to LSU right off the bat. And so the opportunity to see them finally after all this hype was exciting. And then they both, I thought, lived up to those expectations very well. Stingley's a guy that spent the spring intercepting passes on a pretty much daily basis, and as talented as any freshmen typically are, the question mark and the knock on even the best is usually that level of consistency, because you'll see them come in and show flashes and have great days and have off days, But what has really impressed that coaching staff and that team about Will Sting is the fact that he comes out there every day and is one of the best players on that team every day already. And some of the former LSU guys, the NFL guys now who have come by and seen, talk about him as though they would love him on their NFL team right now. And so I think we saw a little taste of that, and I think there's a lot more to come in the fall. And at the same time, big up who on the defensive front in an area where LSU was good but not great and certainly could use a little bit more depth, to see him come in and perform at that level his first time out there in Tiger Stadium with fans in the stands, I think was really big to see for a defense that just with the returning guys should already be pretty strong, and now you add those to the mix. And obviously people got a chance to see the offense speed up a little bit and Joe Burrow work with a bunch of guys. But those two early enrollees on defense, I think, were my big kind of excitement going in and lasting impression coming out.
We're on with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. Jarrett, tell me a little bit about, I know you were busy this weekend. You were down in New Orleans there at the Saints Complex. Tell the folks what you were covering and give us a little highlight.
Yeah, so I was down at the Saints facility for the Pro Football Hall of Fame 7-on-7 series, South Regional Championship, and the Louisiana Bootleggers. They don't have all the top. There are a few Louisiana teams, and so I can't say that the Bootleggers here have all of the top guys, but they certainly have most of them, and they came out and looked the part, swept through another tournament. They just swept through the New Orleans Regional for Pylon a couple weeks ago, and so they finish both of their Louisiana tournaments without dropping a single game in pool play or anything, and then going through the bracket and winning. I don't remember the last time the Bootleggers won two tournaments in that quick of succession, so big weekend for that crew. Coy Moore, a guy that LSU is after, a wide receiver, was good, as he has been. Major Burns on the defensive side. Joel Williams, his teammate at Madison Prep, was back with those guys this weekend after having missed the last one on a visit to Florida. He was looking good, but really, I mean, top to bottom. Caleb Holstein, a guy out in y'all's area, the quarterback for them for all their matches again this weekend, helping lead that team. And so it was good to see a lot of Louisiana guys and perform well as usual. And it was funny to me to ask Coy about it, to sweep through all the Louisiana matchups. I thought was a pretty exciting accomplishment for them, because it hasn't always gone that way. And Coy just kind of shrugged it off and said, yeah, they played okay, but they should be playing much better and are looking to win national championships and things like that. And so two of the last 3 weeks they've received invitations based on these regional tournaments to go compete for national championships. So we'll see by late May how some of that's kind of shaping up.
Jarrett, I appreciate you coming on, making some time for us, brother. Enjoy the travels, man. Are you going to just kind of chillax this weekend, man?
Yeah, I think I'm going to end up being around Baton Rouge a little bit this weekend for Baton Rouge Blues Fest. I might try and get out y'all's direction, because I know the Cajuns have some things going on. As much as I just said I don't get excited about spring games, like 3 minutes ago, than me and to get out to Lafayette and go visit the Cajuns program recently. So I might sneak out there, and then I head to the Miami area for some work on Monday, I think midday Monday. So I'll be going for a couple of days for that, and then a big Easter weekend with a lot of more just personal stuff going on.
Yeah, did you hear that, Cody? You see what our boy just did? He's just like, yeah, I'm going to come over to UL and do some stuff over there, and then I'm just going to head over to Miami for a couple days. Boom. Yeah, yeah. That's how he does it, man. That's how he does it. He's going to enjoy South Beach for a little bit. That's what that's really about.
Yeah, I don't know. That trip out there is going to be a lot of inside date. It's actually going to be really just a hectic Tuesday. So the plan is for me to leave Monday midday, fly out there, get in a little bit later than I'd like on Monday, and then have a hectic Tuesday and catch a flight back Wednesday morning. So I'm really worried I'm not going to get to enjoy that beautiful part of the country, because at one point I was trying to get out there Saturday and have a couple of days before the actual work component started, but I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to do that.
I have faith in your abilities to be able to at least take part in a little fun down there, brother. But I appreciate you coming on, making time for us, as always, my friend, and enjoy the rest of your week, brother.
Yeah, appreciate you, and appreciate that confidence for next week.
This is Jarrett Rozier, Tiger Details, breaking down LSU football and some hoops for us right here on the Rap Game with RP3. When we come back, we'll close out the second hour talking LSU baseball, UL baseball. Both programs picked up much-needed weekend series conference wins. We'll look into it right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III. Wrapping up the second hour here with LSU and Cajuns baseball talk. Both programs picked up much-needed weekend series victories over the weekend. We'll start in Baton Rouge. LSU split the doubleheader with ninth-ranked Texas A&M on Saturday, but that was enough to walk away with the series victory. Because back in game one on Saturday, the Tigers rallied for four runs over the final six outs, but came up short as Texas A&M won that game 6-4. The Tigers did surge behind Cole Henry's dominant eight-inning outing, and Zach Watson went 4-for-5 at the plate in the second game to capture the series. So Henry was sensational in the second game of the doubleheader, and Watson was phenomenal. LSU is 23-10 overall now and 8-4 in the SEC. And they are in a first-place tie with Arkansas and Ole Miss in the SEC Western Division standings, and just a half game behind Georgia in the overall league race. Texas A&M, meanwhile, dropped to 25-8-1 overall and 7-4-1 in league play. That's the first time they dropped an SEC series this season. This is what Paul Maneri had to say. He said, "We have great games with Texas A&M. The competition is fabulous. We enjoy playing them because the teams are always so evenly matched." Texas A&M ace Asa Lacy went 6-0. He worked six innings in the first game of the doubleheader on Saturday. He was phenomenal. He struck out 11. LSU had no answer. Eric Walker struggled, pitched only four innings, suffered the loss. But they rebounded, as I said, with Henry on the mound in the third game, in game two of the doubleheader, and Watson went crazy at the plate. So LSU gets a much-needed weekend series win. We'll talk more about that with Jeff Palermo coming up after the break. Also, the Raging Cajuns, they picked up a very much-needed win as well over the weekend. Look, they started off poorly. You know, they had to play the doubleheader as well on Saturday because everyone moved their games up from Sunday to Saturday. And the Raging Cajuns started off the wrong way for their weekend series. And you were like, uh-oh, here we go. Because Friday night was not a good one there at the Teague as they lost 12-6. But Tony Robichaux and his guys, they rebounded, winning both of the games of the doubleheader on Saturday. They crushed him in the first game, 14-5. The bats just exploded. And then they won 6-1 in the second game. They returned to action versus Louisiana Tech on Tuesday there at the Teague. So the Raging Cajuns got the much-needed win. Now, you could say that it was probably needed more for the Raging Cajuns, and I would agree with that. But still, impressive that both programs got those much-needed weekend series victories. And this is how good the Raging Cajuns were on Saturday. In the two games, they scored 20 runs, had 21 hits, and struck out 22 batters. That's a damn good Saturday. We'll talk more about the Cajuns also in the third hour with our good friend George Faust from KLFY. Third hour coming up right here after this break on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't Step Lunch Locker.
It's Rep Game with RP3, Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. High-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We happy? Yeah, we happy.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
He's got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Welcome to the third and final hour of the Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parts III. Cody Schutz is the man on the ones and twos right here inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We've covered a lot of ground so far today. We led off the show doing a Final Four recap and giving a slight preview of tonight's national championship game between Texas Tech and Virginia. That's right. I just said, instead of saying Virginia, I said Virginia. I had a little extra flair to that. Okay? That'll be tonight. You can go come join me out at Twin Peaks for a watch party between 6 and 8 p.m. as they'll be having a special on some Philly cheesesteaks as well as their terrific teeth-chattering beer on tap. We also recapped the NCAA women's title game. Kim Mulkey, Louisiana's own, picked up her third national championship there at Baylor. Also had an LSU transfer be named the game's MVP. We also talked with Teddy Allen about his connections to Louisiana Tech, as well as give us a little bit of a Masters preview. We recapped the spring game for LSU football and talked about LSU baseball and UL baseball, both picking up much-needed weekend series victories. We're going to dive more in to LSU baseball and the LSU spring game with our next guest as we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our good friend Jeff Palermo, co-host of Tiger Ag Radio. Jeff, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing well, man. Doing well. I know it was a busy weekend, especially there in your neck of the woods. We came over for Saturday, and there was everywhere we looked, there was activity around campus. So much going on. How do you feel? Do you feel relaxed now that the weekend has passed you, Jeff?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, and yesterday was a pretty relaxing day. You had all those events that you just mentioned on Saturday and all kinds of stuff going on in the LSU campus. And then Sunday there was nothing going on. And then we just kind of sat around and waited for the rain. But, yeah, and I would say it was a productive weekend for LSU baseball, taking 2 out of 3 from Texas A&M, just exactly what you wanted to do against a really good team. And then I thought the LSU football spring game was, I don't want to say it was boring. I don't want to say it was exciting, but I guess you saw some things there. You saw quarterbacks lining up in shotgun formation. You saw quick passes. You saw the running backs get involved in the passing game. And you saw Derek Stingley make an interception. And so those were some of the things that you were kind of looking for, and you actually saw them on Saturday.
Let's start there, Jeff. Let's start with the spring football. I was there for that as well. And, you know, look, it's spring football. You don't have special teams gunners. You can't sack the quarterback. Hell, you can't even touch the quarterback, right? So it's, you know, they were calling sacks left and right for guys who were just breathing near Joe Burrow and Miles Brennan. So you know what you get here. And they're not going to show their hand on what they want to do with the offense as well. But a couple things that did stand out to me. I know there's all this talk about the two freshman running backs come in, and then you got Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But Curry may very well make it a difficult decision and make people start talking about him as possibly being one of the guys there in the mix at running back. Your thoughts on his performance? He played well, plus he had that – he trucked that one DB. What do you think about Curry, who was redshirted last year?
Yeah, it was good to see Chris Curry step up. And you're always looking for one of these guys that was on campus last year that really didn't have much of an impact. And he was certainly one, only handful of carries or plays that he saw a season ago. And for him to have the game that he had, that was nice to see. to get a physical back and be able to run some people over, as you mentioned. Obviously, a lot of people are high on the two running backs that are coming in. I think they're going to be good players, but it's nice to have maybe another guy in there that you'll be able to lean on that's got some experience, at least somebody that's been in a college game. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Leonard Fournette, those guys are smaller size backs. So you need, you're looking for a big back here instead of having to go rely on a John Emery right off the bat from Destrehan. So to know that Curry looks like a guy that he can give the ball to, he's going to be able to get you some tough yards, run between the tackles, I think it's a good sign for LSU's offense heading into next year.
Let's stay on the offensive side of the ball, Jeff. We know Jefferson is Joe Burrow's favorite target. He was, again, in the spring game, and he will be during the season. That's his go-to guy. And but the wide receiving core has a lot of depth, and that's an asset, whether it's Chase or Marshall or whoever it may be. One guy in particular is Sullivan, who is listed as either wide receiver or tight end. He's a massive kid, 6'6", 6'7". And in the spring game, he had this one just amazing catch where he had to leap up because Joe threw it over his head, and he had to get off the ground 2 feet to haul in the pass. And he had another difficult catch in traffic. But then he had two passes that hit him right in the breadbasket that he dropped. What were your thoughts about Sullivan, and if he can improve and be more consistent, and I know Ed O wants him to, how dangerous could this wide receiving core be?
Well, there's certainly, it seems like there's a lot of talent in that wide receiver crew. There's no doubt about it. And Stephon Sullivan is a guy who will be a senior next season that you would anticipate him really starting to take another step here. I mean, he, as you mentioned, a big kid. When he caught something like 20, 25 balls a season ago, a couple touchdowns. But you would think he'd be a pretty good target for this team. And it'll be interesting to see how much, because they really didn't have, they don't have any returning tight ends coming into the season, how much of a role that he plays there just because of his size. But you want to see, you know, the big wide receiver make some catches, but I would imagine one of the reasons why Stephon Sullivan hasn't been able to really put it all together is kind of what you saw on Saturday. There's just some inconsistency there. He can make some catches here and there, but other times he's going to drop some passes, and they need him to be able to obviously grab the ball. The guy's got a, because of that big frame, he's got good leaping ability, so he could be a weapon, especially in the red zone. And he's a guy, too, because of his size, and he's also got a little speed to him that once he catches the ball, you would think he can get some yards after the catch. But catching the ball is obviously the number one priority for him, and he needs to do a better job on that.
Let's switch over to the defensive side of the ball. We're talking to Jeff Palermo, co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff, D-tackle, nose tackle in particular, I was impressed by the young man out of Utah. He just gobbled up guys, and he was manhandling that offensive line throughout the entire game. Another guy that stood out to me, local Acadiana product, Tyler Shelvin, who Coach O tells us he's down to a good playing weight of 341. I know when he arrived on campus, he was closer to 400. What did you think of those two guys? I think it's going to be a rotation. What did you think of how they played?
Yeah, I thought that was nice to see, especially coming from the young man from Utah, as you mentioned, to see him be as a destructive force there. Now, you didn't have Rashard Lawrence. You didn't have Caleb Von Chasson. So you didn't have a couple of critical members on that defense that you're going to be counting on next season. And I think those guys really played well. Tyler Shelvin is going to be a key guy. He lost a lot of depth at that nose tackle position. So somebody that, you know, when you look at him, as you mentioned, a big kid, 340 pounds, he's got the power to overpower an interior lineman. He's got to put it all together. And he's a guy that's trying to transform his body a little bit, but you would hope that, you know, he could have a significant part on this team. I thought another guy on the defensive side that had a good spring and looked fairly good in the spring game was Patrick Queen. So he's a guy that got a little bit of action last year, of course, started the Alabama game and He was one of the leading tacklers in that game, and was one of the leading tacklers in the bowl game as well. He might be one of those guys that you see makes a huge step in production on the defensive side of the ball.
Jeff, we'll stay on defense. Derek Stingley Jr. I've been around the program like you have been. I've seen guys come in with a lot of hype. He reminds me of the last time I saw a guy come in with this much hype and deliver right off the bat and look like he could be a starter from day one was Patrick Peterson.
Yeah.
That's who Stingley reminds me of in a lot of ways. The way he understands Aranda's scheme and knows where he needs to be. He was never out of position on Saturday. He had that great interception where he just ripped that ball. And I love the fact that his helmet came off and he celebrated with his teammates. And it's just, he has an immense amount of confidence for a kid who's still just a kid, Jeff.
He is just a kid and somebody that should have been, finishing up his senior year at high school, but because he's a good student as well, was able to finish high school early at Dunham here in Baton Rouge. And yeah, this guy's going to be a playmaker for the next three seasons. And you did not get a chance to see him return punts, and he's going to be such a critical factor in that part of the game as well. But I think he's a guy that obviously has a lot of hype coming into this season, but I think the hype is well warranted, and I think he's someone that can live up to the hype. I mean, he looks like he can be your lockdown corner. It's going to intercept some passes, going to make some things happen in the punt return game. I think before it's all said and done in his college career, he's going to maybe line up a little bit at wide receiver every now and then, just a couple of plays here and there, because he's somebody that is just elusive with the football. He's got just tremendous talent. The sky's the limit for him, and I think that's a really good comparison between him and Patrick Peterson, because I think it's kind of they're both the same type of player. They're just immediate impact players as soon as they step on the field.
Jeff, let's switch over. We'll leave football, and let's talk baseball. A much-needed weekend series for the Tigers. They take game one on Friday. They have to play the doubleheader because of all the weather, like you said. And that kid from A&M, that pitcher was just lights out. I was there in the press box, and I was like, geez, can anyone hit this kid? They lose the first game, but then they come back and take the second game. Zach Watson went nuts at the plate. Your thoughts about the performance from start to finish of the Tigers there at Alex Box over the weekend?
Well, got kind of a, I don't want to say a lucky victory on Friday, but one of those runs scored should have been a routine flyout, and it turned into a round tripper for Brant Broussard. But good enough pitching there for LSU from Zach Hess, and then Trent Vitmeyer, I believe, came out of the pen on Friday and did the job. And Devin Fontenot was just outstanding to close the game. He's become the closer now for this team. He's thrown some heat. He's been really good all season long, and that was a nice win for the Tigers, and to get the big home run from Josh Smith in the eighth inning to help give LSU the 2-1 victory. And then you're right, on Saturday they just ran up against a really good pitcher, and when they got him out of the game, they swung the bats better, and they swung the bats really well in the series finale, collecting 12 hits and Zach Watson picking up the four hits. But I told you this before, with the weekend rotation with Zach Hess, Eric Walker, and Cole Henry, I think every weekend you're almost guaranteed two out of the three guys there will give you a really good start, and that's exactly what happened this past weekend. And when you get that, you get an opportunity to win series victories. And now the schedule lightens up a little bit for LSU. This was a tough stretch here where you played three consecutive weekends against ranked teams. And now it eases up a little bit. Now, they will still have, a tough weekend coming up in Columbia, Missouri. I've already taken a look at the forecast. It looks like, in particular on Friday, it's going to be cold in the 40s. So maybe the weather might be one of the biggest opponents for LSU that weekend. But after that, they get Florida at the box. They're a team that's in rebuild mode after several great seasons. Florida has been struggling here as of late, and they have a losing record in SEC play, and then after that they'll play Alabama, another team that's got a losing record in conference play. After that, it's going to be Ole Miss, and I think then they'll have a tough stretch here to end it against SEC West teams, against Ole Miss, Arkansas, and Auburn. But at 8-4 through 12 games of this thing, considering the teams they've had to play, three consecutive ranked teams, I think the Tigers are in really good shape.
Jeff, appreciate you coming on as always, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your week. Glad you got the jam-packed weekend behind you. You can now relax a little bit. Enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll talk to you soon, brother.
All right, sounds good, Raymond. Thanks.
Jeff Palermo, co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, joining us here on the Rap Game with RP3. When we come back, a certain producer extraordinaire is going to give us an animated, enthusiastic, and detailed recap of WrestleMania. It was last night and early this morning, actually, before it wrapped up.
Who, me? Couldn't be. Then who?
Right here on 103.78.
Word life, this is basic thugonomics. This
Raymond, basic, let me just say, word life. At approximately, I don't know what time, 10:15, maybe a little before that yesterday or last night, when this hit, I lost my mind. For those who don't know John Cena, you know John Cena as the never give up, hustle, loyalty, respect. The guy that's made and granted over 600 make-a-wishes. That's the John Cena we all know. This John Cena is where it all started. Circa 2002, Word Life John Cena, the doctor of thugonomics. We haven't seen John Cena in, and we see him in jean shorts all the time.
You're so bad.
But we haven't seen him in jean shorts with an unbuttoned throwback Yankees Babe Ruth jersey on, because they were in New York, with this backwards fitted new era Yankees cap, with his pump up Reebok sneakers that he pumped up. He absolutely stole the show, at least from
stole
my perspective.
That's a terrible character, first of all.
Oh, it's awful. It's the best, and you know
it's
it.
So bad. You just can't separate yourself and see how just terrible, ridiculous it is.
It is amazing.
It's Malibu's most wanted as a wrestler.
And? Malibu's most wanted is a great... Are you bad-mouthing Jamie Kennedy right now? Don't you do that. How dare you? Shame on you.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3 here on 103.37 The Game. I'm going to let Cody Schutz take over for this segment. It is the official WrestleMania recap from the one and only Cody Schutz. Cody, take it away. I will be the second banana here. You will be the main event.
Well, just to finish off where I started with John Cena, because to me that was, because I knew he was going to be there, but in what sense was he going to be there? And when his music hits and it's not the brrr, brrr, the music everybody knows, I lost my mind. The way when he came out was during the Elias segment. Elias was, who is basically the, like you said, the ripoff version of the Honky Tonk Man. Now he was coming out. He did his little performance, and then when he was really getting into it, he did his whole, for my first song today, so the crowd starts booing. He's like, oh, there's going to be multiple of these. No, boo. And John Cena comes out, and I called it on the show, if you remember. I said I wanted him to come out and battle rap Elias. I thought I was just being absolutely ridiculous. I'm just throwing crap at the wall, and apparently this stuck, because John Cena comes out and just runs down Elias, just up one side, down the other. He even throws back to, because his, when he was this John Cena, his finishing move was called the FU. When he transitioned to the more family-friendly one, he changed it to the AA for the attitude adjustment. Well, he even harkened back and he was like, no, you're not getting no attitude adjustment today. And he made it rhyme and it ended with FU. And it was absolutely amazing. So I'm going to put my fanboy
away
now.
You're so happy.
It was the best. It was incredible. Kaysen, who stayed up late to watch the show, he lost his mind. And he's never even seen John Cena in that incarnation before. So absolutely amazing on all ends. But for me, other than John Cena, if we're going to talk about a match, because Cena didn't have a match. He came out, he talked trash to Elias, beat him up, and then left. As far as the matches go, the best match of the night, in my opinion, was Daniel Bryan and Kofi Kingston. It was back and forth, back and forth. As much as I wanted Kofi Kingston to win, I didn't think they would do it. And then they pulled it out of nowhere. Kofi Kingston wins the WWE Championship from Daniel Bryan. And then the reveal of it was so incredible. All night, they had whatever championship match was going on, they had the belt for that match right outside the ring on a little pedestal.
Right.
The pedestal had this like black velvet cloth over it with, if you ever seen like a thing that holds your ring, that you can put a ring on that'll hold it, it looked a lot like that. So the belt would be closed and fit over the top of it. When Kofi Kingston beat Daniel Bryan, New Day ran over to the vegan belt that's made out of hemp and it's got no leather or anything in it, and they took it and they threw it to the side and it was like, well, what are you doing? and they pulled the black velvet off the top of the pedestal, and the thing that the other belt was around holding it up was the black leather belt with the big W that everybody's used to seeing, that we all know and love, and it was hiding right in plain sight underneath, and it was just one of those things where not only did Kofi Kingston get to celebrate, but he got to celebrate with the right belt, the belt that everybody wants back. So it was just mind-blowing, amazing. Probably the second biggest pop I had of the night was at the very beginning of the show. The show started with the host of WrestleMania, Alexa Bliss. She came out and she was like, I'm the host. I'm going to make a WrestleMania moment with the snap of my fingers. And she snaps. And as soon as she snaps, what hits? I am a real American. Hulk Hogan comes out from the back. He's hitting all the Hogan must pose, as Vince McMahon would say. He's hitting all the spots. Absolutely incredible. However you feel about Hulk Hogan or not, it was hilarious to see him at WrestleMania last night to start the show. That was all we saw of him, but that was great. And then interrupting Hulk Hogan was none other than the advocate for Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman, and Brock and Seth Rollins open up the show. Who saw that coming? Brock Lesnar then dismantled Seth Rollins before Seth Rollins hit three curb stomps in a row to finally pin Brock Lesnar. 1, 2, 3. And that leads me to the final match of the night.
Bye, Brock.
Well,
good for him.
He's going for now. He'll be back, but he's going for now, probably. The final match of the night, the triple threat. Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, Ronda Rousey. I'll leave it at this. Becky Lynch won. That means we were wrong. I was very wrong. All three of the big matches went to the babyface.
That's right. We said they'd be two or three.
I didn't think there was any shot at that happening. I'm glad it went down that way. I will report back tomorrow after we watch Raw tonight to see what they say about the finish of that triple threat match, because it was a little shaky. The word botch has maybe been thrown around a little bit.
I don't know. Do you think they did that on purpose to set up a storyline?
I hope.
To say the company wanted Becky to win, and Charlotte and Ronda can use that to their thing, that saying that it was rigged and everything like that, and that can be the new storyline.
And even if they don't go that far with it, even if they just go as simple as saying that Ronda can complain, my shoulder was up. She doesn't even have to go as far to say it's a company, it's an inside job conspiracy. She can just simply, my shoulder was up, because that is the thing. Ronda Rousey's shoulder, it was up. My question is, was that even supposed to be the finish of the match? Just a lot
that
of questions.
Move, I know there's some sloppiness
the Piper's
there.
Pit.
It was violent. But that move that Lynch did when Charlotte had Rousey over the ropes and she came in and knocked her down onto the mat, I was like, oh!
Ronda Rousey was bruised up and down one side of
her
leg.
Reports have that she has a broken hand.
It was a hell of a match, just the end, and that's what I hate about it. The end was a little wonky, but it doesn't take away, in my opinion, the greatest WrestleMania in the last 5 years for sure. Better than last year.
You were at last year.
I was there last year. Better than last year.
Oh, my man. My man. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you and the world-famous Clint D will dive more into this WrestleMania on the podcast this week, sir.
You can bet your bottom dollar.
Nice. When we come back, we'll talk with George Faust, Raging Cajuns, and more with the Dean Cain Presidente himself from KLFY right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. And it's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline for our fourth and final guest. We finish strong every Monday. It's the Dean Cain, the Presidente, the leader of the free world, or the leader of at least Acadiana sports world, the one and only KLFY Sports Director, George Faust. Fausty, how are you this morning, brother?
Doing well, man. Trying to get some things done. Yeah, but everything's going great. How you doing?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Let's get right to it, Fausty. Big weekend for the Raging Cajuns baseball team. They needed a weekend series badly. They got it, especially after dropping the first game like they did. They come back. They win the twin bill on Saturday to take the weekend series against Arkansas State. Your thoughts on what the Raging Cajuns were able to accomplish this past weekend at the Teague?
Oh, look, I think it was huge, because in the end, that's going to be, that might come down and help him when it comes to, getting, well, seeding in the Sun Belt tournament or just kind of boost their motivation, their their what's the word I'm looking for? Boost their morale a little bit with regards to how sorry about that.
Someone is not happy about the Raging Cajuns dropping the first game of that weekend series.
No, she didn't like the idea that they lost that first game. She was not happy about that. But look, for them to be able to come back and to get two big wins, and I mean that finally the bats come alive, right? I think it's going to help them. This might be what Coach Robichaud has been talking about. You know, kind of the turnaround. They needed to get timely hitting, and they needed to take care of their pitching. And Austin Perrin did a great job in the first game on Saturday. And to get that kind of performance is what they continually need now. So, but yeah, absolutely. I think they have the ability here to kind of maybe use this as a catalyst for the rest of the season.
George, Hanson Monica, you know, he last year was supposed to be a key player for this team. He gets injured in that series at Texas and is sidelined for the rest of the year. They get the medical redshirt for him. He comes back. He was a little slow to start the season, but he's really has come on here as the season's progressed. How important has that been for the Raging Cajuns, and how important will Hanson be for them moving forward?
Look, he's a vital part of the offense. Obviously, you saw it on Saturday. I mean, their bats came alive. I mean, Hanson was able to knock two out in one game. So that's huge, and the thing about it is, I mean, it's always been there for him. It's just a matter of, you know, I guess it clicking this season, and he's made an adjustment. He's kind of playing a lot more first base right now, so had to make that adjustment and get used to that, I think it's going to be key. The question was how important is it? I think it's vital. That he continue to progress and look, that's the thing about baseball, man. It just takes one little thing, one little strikeout, a home run. I mean, his home run that really sparked the first home run he hit on Saturday in game one of the doubleheader, game two of the series. That thing, I mean, that sparked the atmosphere completely changed on that one swing of the bat. I mean, that's a second, dude. He swung the bat, hit the ball out the park, and everything just kind of loosened up. It's kind of like somebody taking a big breath and like going, finally, we know what we're doing. You know, it's working. What we've been working on is finally working. And I think that's what he provided. And his leadership as this second half goes on is going to be huge.
We're on with George Faust, sports director of KLFY. Fausty, the Cajuns, you know, they get back home. They had the Southeastern game last week, but then they had to go play the makeup game on the road. But with this Arkansas State series, they're going to be at home for a while. They got La Tech coming up on Tuesday night, then McNeese on Wednesday. Both of those are at the Teague, and then a three-game set with South Alabama this coming weekend before heading out for the Wally Pontiff Classic the following week there down at the Shrine on Airline. In your estimation, brother, what do they have to do on this homestand the rest of the way? Do they have to win all five, or do they need to at least take four or five?
No, there's no reason why they can't win all five. Now, if you're gonna hold your own and contend and turn this thing around like that, like I'm kind of projecting and hoping that they do for them and for this team. There's no reason why you can't win all five. You go out there, you take them one at a time, but I think in the words of Coach Robichaud, keep the blinders on the mule, but you realize that you have an opportunity here. I mean, you got eight games at home. If you go 7-8 in that stretch, you've done a great job.
Right.
And so, they can go 4 out of 5, but you set the bar at 5 out of 5. There's no reason why you can't go do that. Why you can't get 5 out of 5? You take it one game at a time, though. You go ahead and take care of the first one, and then you can let that one go and go get the second one. It starts with the midweek on Tuesday, and I think that's a realistic goal. If that team that played Saturday in that first game was true, like that they put up 14 runs in that game. If that team shows up with solid pitching, I think they have an opportunity to really go win five and put themselves in a really 4-2 in this situation.
And Princess Faust agrees with you. She's
the queen. Don't make any about it. I may be the king, but she's the queen.
I know, brother. Trust me. I know. Let's talk about the UL softball team. George, are they ever going to lose a Sun Belt series again?
I'm going to go ahead and say probably not. How about that? I'm not trying to put too much expectations on them, but they're on fire, right? I mean, they've done a great job of being able to just take care of business when they're on the diamond, and that's exactly what's happening. So, I mean, that's exactly what's happening. You know, they don't. It seems like even if they're in a tight game, there's never like. If it's a tight game, they have control of that tight game, you know? And that's what I think happened. I mean, they won, what, 2-0 and 4-2 this weekend. So the games weren't blowouts, but the Cajuns, I never felt like the Cajuns were in a danger of losing the contest. I think they really had the opportunity. They continually had the opportunity to win. So I just don't think it's amazing how successful they are, but that's a credit to Coach Glasgow and the hard work of the girls and how they just continue to work.
And the thing that impresses me too about this year's team, and Coach Glasgow talked about this last year, is that, you know, they struggled at hitting home runs, and they lost a couple of their best power hitters that transferred out when he took over, right? And they struggled. They had to play a lot of small ball last year, George. This year, they are knocking the hell out of the ball, hitting home runs left and right, and that's given this team a totally different dynamic that they didn't have last year.
Yeah, and I think part of that is due to now you kind of know what Coach Glasgow wants. You know, as a player, in his first year, you're kind of like, okay, we've had this one style of hitting for a long time. But now we're switching. Okay, what does this coach want? How do we handle that, and how do we go about making him happy and doing what he needs to do and still get the results? I think it's a bit of a transition, and obviously Coach Glasgow has done a great job of getting players in that can do what he wants them to do and at a high caliber too. I mean, like Alyssa Dalton is a young lady who just, you know, she's for lack of a better word, a professional. She goes out there and just does her job and leads the team. And there's a ton of those. Summer Ellison is another one. Like, I mean, to have that much control of the game and be a person that everybody looks to, and they all feed off of each other. So yeah, I think part of that reason now, basically with regards to hitting, is the fact that I think they're with Coach Glasgow. He's now been there a year. This is the second year, and he's kind of got the attention, and they know what he wants. The expectations are there, and they know, okay, we need to go get those, go do what he wants us to do, and we can attack it. A year and a half under his system, it seems to be working out for him.
Fausty, I'll let you go out with this, brother. National championship game is tonight. Texas Tech takes on Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
Does either team score 60 points in the game?
Well, I hope they do, because my tiebreaker is 120. So if both of them do that, not that I'm still in the bracket, I'm like 11th because of me, like a lot of other people, had Duke. But, No, I'm going to say no. Let's go with, like, I think I'm going to go with Texas Tech. I think they're going to win the game. I just think they're just a little bit. I just like their style of play. They're just go get them, and you know, let's go play. You know, guns up, as they say. You know, I'm going to go. I think Texas Tech's going to win the game, but I'll even give you a score. What do you say? Let's go 58-55. a missed three-pointer at the end from Virginia.
58-55, Tech winner, says the Fausti.
There you go.
Well, George, I appreciate you and the Queen making time for us, as always, on this Monday. Yeah, well, we'll talk to you soon.
Man.
Brother, don't you apologize one bit. I appreciate it, man, and have a great week, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good, man. Talk to you later.
George Faust, sports director at KLFY, breaking down some Raging Cajuns for us. Friends, Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards has proclaimed the month of April as Safe Digging Month in Louisiana as part of a nationwide safety awareness campaign to draw attention to the importance of safe evacuation. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. So if you or a contractor you hire is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or a garden, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. That's why it's so important for everyone to dial 811 and call Louisiana One Call 2 days before they dig. You can just tell the operator your address and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can simply avoid them. It's simple, it's free, and it's the law. All demolishers and diggers are required to notify Louisiana One Call before they begin work. The law applies to individuals as well as contractors, municipalities, and others. Failure to call can subject the individual to fines and liability for damages to buried infrastructure. So call 811 and know what's below before you dig. When we come back, we'll wrap up today's show right here on 103.7 The Game. To all my golf friends out there in Acadiana, it's not too late for you guys to sign up for the 2019 Masters Tournament Challenge through 103.7 The Game. You heard our good friend Teddy Allen talk about the Masters this week. His predicts, he has Rory McIlroy or DJ Dustin Johnson. Hey, those could be your picks as well. The only thing you got to do, go to the 103.7 The Game website, click on the link for the 2019 Masters Tournament Challenge, and you can enter to get a $100 gift card from golfballs.com. It's that easy, guys. You just sign up, pick the golfer you think will win the 2019 Masters, and if that winning golfer is selected by more than one entry, we will put all correct entries in a raffle and select a winner. Easy way to get a $100 gift card. Look, even if you don't play golf, if you pick the correct winner, you can use that $100 gift card. You give it as a gift. Give it to someone who does love the game of golf or has a love-hate relationship with the game of golf like I do. So make sure to go pick that up. NCAA Men's Tournament National Championship game tonight from Minnesota. Once again, you can come join me for a watch party leading up to the game and to the early portions of the game, 6 to 8 at Twin Peaks on Johnston. They're having a $5 Philly cheesesteak special. They got the teeth-chattering beer on tap, plus the scenic views. I'll have some free swag to give away, so come talk to me. Come hang out with us at the 103.7 The Game watch party there at Twin Peaks on Johnston tonight. But the game itself, Texas Tech looking to win its first national championship. Virginia, I do believe, is doing the same thing. Texas Tech versus Virginia, supposed to be a low-scoring game, both defensive-minded teams. Cody, we asked the Twitter poll question earlier in the show, do you think either team will eclipse 60 points tonight? What are the results so far?
So far, early returns, kind of a split vote. The no's have it slightly at 56%. So, but pretty split there.
So that's a good line then. I picked a good
60
number.
Points seems to be right at where everybody is thinking, at least so far.
So let's talk real quick. Cody,
mm-hmm.
You've been watching this tournament. You saw your bracket get annihilated by these teams, as did I.
Right.
Who do you got? Why? What's the score?
I'm going to say that the winning team does go over 60 points, but just barely. I'm going to say it's like a 63-59, 63-55 victory in that area there. And I'm going to go with Texas Tech seems to be the trendy pick. They seem to be the team that is fun. But since this tournament has been as chalky of one as it has, I'm going to stick with that, and I'm going to continue to go chalk, and I'm going to take the number one seed that made it to the final game, and I'm going to go with the Cavaliers.
The Wahoos. You actually stole my thunder.
Oh.
I think it's the as great as Texas Tech is, and they're having a tremendous season.
They're the trendy pick. They're the team that I think
they're the trendy.
The
pick.
Nation, in air quotes, is leaning
towards. Right, because everyone hates Virginia because of the style of play they play. I think it's gonna. I think they're gonna complete the comeback story, the redemption story for Virginia, being the first team to lose to a 16 seed as a one seed in the NCAA tournament.
It's a hell of a headline.
Last year, most of that team came back to come back and now win a national championship. That would be tremendous. I talked about this throughout the last couple of weeks. It feels that Tony Bennett is this year's Jay Wright. Jay Wright had the knock at Villanova of always getting to the tournament and getting upset or having an early departure and never getting over the hump and never getting to the Final Four. And he broke through, got to the Final Four, won a national championship. Now he's won two. It very much feels that way. Tony Bennett is kind of in that same class that Virginia is going to break through. And no team epitomizes this modern era of the one-and-done era of college basketball better than Virginia. They're a veteran-laden team that isn't sexy.
Right.
Okay, and
no one
just
will
not.
Use that word to describe them.
Right,
no.
They're just not. And I just think they're going to pull it out. They're going to beat Texas Tech tonight 64-61. So I say both teams go over 60, but Virginia does enough to hold on for a slim win and get that national championship.
So what we've learned here is, after hearing all of that, is that Texas Tech will win tonight. And at halftime,
85 points.
And at halftime, the score will be 60 something to like 50 something at halftime. Like, you just that's almost confirmed. There, you can guarantee that. But not, so we both lean towards Virginia. That's interesting.
And we can hope that maybe like Bruce Pearl can embarrass himself and try to interfere with the refs and have a meltdown by jumping on the court, a la to what happened to Bret the Hitman Hart during the Hall of Fame ceremony on Saturday, which you just avoided, by the way.
That guy's a jabroni. There's no reason to talk about this guy. Although WWE, step your game up a little bit, because hindsight being 2020, if you don't know what we're talking about, Bret Hart during the Hall of Fame ceremony, WWE, a fan bum-rushed the stage or the ring and tackled him to the ground. He's fine, and the guy got beat up real bad by Zack Ryder. But, oh, he did. Zack Ryder jumped him and punched, got a few good shots in for security, took him out. But WWE just saying, this guy's a nobody. He's MMA something, I think. But he was even on Twitter kind of basically calling a shot, like saying, hey, watch what I'm going to do, and you missed it. So.
Why are you tackling a stroke survivor and a cancer survivor and a Hall of Fame legend guy who's in his 60s? Like, why are you doing that?
Publicity. But that's why I'm not going to say his name. I don't want to give him a lot of pub.
Faced!
Screw that guy.
Faced! It was a terrific show. I want to thank our guests, Teddy Allen, Jarrett Rozier, Jeff Palermo, and George Faust. I want to thank Cody Schutz for his WrestleMania recap and for being here after staying up so late watching it all. Appreciate you being here, brother.
Good night.
We'll have a tremendous show on tomorrow, 6 to 8. We'll have Andrew Juge on, and as well as Craig Perks helping us with Masters preview coverage. Y'all be safe out there today. Talk to you tomorrow here on 103.7 The Game.